Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. This is Kristen Bry. I'm here today with Melissa Baldoff. Have you listened to Beyonce's new album?
Yes, multiple times.
Multiple times. Favorite song?
I really like Thick.
Okay. I have to go back and remember which one Thick is.
But it's kind of hard to, for me, it was kind of hard to pinpoint like favorites because it's really like the album I think is like such a like cohesive experience, right? Like everything, it flows from song to song to song to song. Like it's not an album you could like listen to on shuffle, right? Like,
yeah.
It, and I really like that. So yeah, I would say that's probably my favorite, but I have very much enjoyed the album as a whole.
Yeah, I kept trying to sit down and listen to the whole thing. And then because of, you know, ADHD stuff, I would start doing something else. So I feel like I haven't sat down and given it like the attention. And I'm also just not a music critic. So Who cares what I really think? But I would say I like the single that got released. I've listened to that song maybe at least once a day since it came out. The Summer Renaissance song that came out, I really like. And like what I like, what I think is so impressive about Beyonce, because I was never really in the, you know, Destiny's Child was good. I think their debut really, when they hit the charts, I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of my girlfriends had their poster on the wall and Bills, Bills, Bills and like all that stuff. And I liked them. And then when she went solo, it was like, you know, she has so many hits. Mm-hmm. And it was fine. Like, she was, like, a pop star. And she was really talented. And she could really sing. And she could really dance. But, the music hadn't really, like, hadn't been, like, a diehard. And then when Beyonce came out. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, the surprise album. And everyone went nuts. And there were so many songs on that album that I was like, oh. Like, the song Jealous on that album, I still sing. And I'm like, oh, my God, this, like, hits me hard. And then when Lemonade came out.
Ugh, yes.
And I feel like everything kind of since Beyonce, that is, everything she does is so much more than just a song. Like, it is so visually, there's a whole concept behind it. Mm-hmm. Like, the perfectionism of down to the costumes, to, like, her Netflix, when she did the Coachella and the Homecoming thing where she had an entire marching band that was all, you know, black musicians and the entire, like, all of it. Like, she's so detailed and specific. It's just, like, it's unbelievable to watch.
Yeah, she's very intentional. And I think one of the things I really appreciate about this album is, to me, and again, like, I'm not a music critic either, and, like, I'm no expert, and I certainly don't know Beyonce, although I absolutely
personally
wish I did. but it just seems like she's really having fun with this. Like, it seems, I think there's a lot of joy in this album. And I think that she, you know, really kind of did what she wanted to do creatively. And I think she's been, you know, like, very intentional about how she approaches things and, you know, made, you know, she, how important was it for so many people when she made Lemonade, which is just so, you know, unapologetically black and like gave a voice to so many women, and, you know, especially women of color. And, you know,
and also
now,
women who had gone through being cheated on and like the entire grief stages of that, like that was unbelievable.
Yeah, that was Freedom from that album was definitely a song I needed. I was like going through a divorce from my first husband, and that album spoke to me too. And you know, I think now you see this album is just like very unapologetically queer, and I think that's important too, to see music that has, you know, and styles that have historically maybe been on the margins are being elevated. And it seems to me that she is somebody who always tries to, it seems like she tries to give credit where it should, where it's due. And I think that's great as an artist. to be able to do that.
Because it's basically what, at least I read the New York Times, and it was like, it's the whole thing is steeped in dance music. And like the history of that and the different iterations mm-hmm. and the subgenres within dance music and different regions versus like Chicago versus the South and New Orleans and stuff and how that shifts, which I think that's even cool because I think so often when you're not Beyonce, it seems like certain artists get pigeonholed by their labels of like, this is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And it has to sound like this, blah, blah, blah. And like Beyonce doesn't have to apply by those rules and she kind of do what she
right.
wants.
I mean, she's been around for what, you know, 25 yeah. or so years, and it is still, when she drops an album, it is a cultural moment.
Which is funny because my friend Corey Joe, who was on here last week, not a fan of the album, okay. and this is what she said. Said, I think this Beyonce album is a dare. Beyonce's friends said, we bet you can't make a horrible album with a couple decent singles and it still go number one. Then Bey was like, watch this in her Usher voice.
Right. Watch this.
And so Corey Joe, not a fan. I like it. I definitely will like listen to it more. But more of the controversy that has come out mm-hmm. since it dropped Friday.
Yep.
Which was the same word and the same controversy that actually happened with Lizzo,
yes,
not even like a month ago,
mm-hmm.
is that they both in singles used the word spaz,
mm-hmm.
which I, before the Lizzo thing happened, did not know was considered a ableist slur mm-hmm. against people who have cerebral palsy.
Right.
And I think in America lingo, it's not really used like that mm-hmm. in the same way in the UK and Australia. This is what I learned through the Lizzo thing.
Right.
But similar to Lizzo, both Lizzo and Beyonce have taken out the word mm-hmm. from their songs, which I don't really know how much more you can ask from
yeah,
an artist.
I agree. And I think they both, you know, were very sincere in how they approached it. And like you said, it's not, I believe, as common. I was not familiar with that being an ableist slur. But
I've heard don't be a spaz
right.
before. And I think I always assumed that came, I don't know, in the same way, like don't be a,
like the R word.
But I think I always knew that from a young age, like the R word was maybe that's because I have an uncle who has Down syndrome.
Right.
Like that was more, even though it used to be more accepted, like you didn't get in trouble for saying it.
But you knew it was bad.
You kind of knew it was bad.
Right.
Versus spaz to me had always been like you're just being
like I almost see it as like more like goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I never knew mm-hmm. until last month that it was considered that. And so I think it was very responsible for them to say, I didn't know, I took it out. But then for the fans who keep coming back and being like, that's not enough.
Well, so here's my other thing with it. I do think that, like I said, I think that they were both accountable and they were sincere in how they approached it. And like you said, it's responsible. But I worry that it seems that so often we are holding Black women to a different and higher standard. And I don't want that to be the case. I certainly don't want people to be out there perpetuating ableist slurs and, you know, making life harder and more uncomfortable and, you know, upsetting for people who have disabilities. But like I said, I don't want to see Black women held to this higher standard when it comes to their art.
I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. Because I didn't know you were going to say that, but I'm trying to, now my brain is going and trying to think of situations where there's been a double standard, because I feel like they both handled it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there's plenty of examples where artists did not handle, no matter whether they were male, whatever race they were, whatever, just have been like, no, it's staying.
Right.
I feel like Eminem would be like, have no problem. Be like, no, that word is staying. And
right.
And everyone would just have to deal with it. And so, I don't know. Like, I think, I don't know. I don't. I think that, especially because it's like, how much grace do you give to artists who have spent so much time on an album, and then you focus on one word, like how, for one, you know, these are people, these are two artists who are pretty much the top of their game. Lizzo's obviously a little bit more recent than Beyonce, but I have a feeling her talent level, she's not going anywhere for a while. But the expectations we put on artists to be perfect, I don't think it's helpful, because like you said, like there's so much voice and representation that they, especially these two, do provide, that it's how high of a standard do you need to keep everybody in order to like not, I don't want to use this word.
They get to learn too, right? And I think it's how you handle something like that says a lot about who you are. And the fact that they handled it very graciously and listened to the people who voiced concerns, I think says a lot about who they are. You know, would it be problematic if like the next three albums they both drop have the same word in it? Yeah, that would probably not be great. But I feel like you got to give people a little bit of grace and let them learn sometimes.
I also, there was a part of me that wondered if Beyonce last month listened to Lizzo's album and like had any idea of what was going on, and in her mind she was like, crap. Like, you know, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get away with it. And so it was just kind of like, well, we're going to keep it in there and see how it goes. Because that wasn't a, I mean, Trevor Noah was talking about it on Daily Show. And so it was kind of a big deal. But like you said, now we've all learned something. That is a word that shouldn't be used casually. And so I know that I will, not that it was really in my vernacular in the first place, but now we know. All right. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about you, how you got to Wisconsin and what you have taken on and what you will always be Florida proud about.
Sounds good.
All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. I am here today with Melissa Baldoff. So you're not from Wisconsin.
I am not.
How did you end up in Wisconsin?
Great question, because I get so many people who say, like, why did you move here from Florida? It's so cold here. So I moved up to Wisconsin in 2010. I was going to go to law school at UW. I moved to Madison. And then ended up getting a job working in politics for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. First, as an intern, because like my kids were little. It was right before my daughter, who's older, started kindergarten. So I was like, oh, like childcare is so expensive. Like I'm not gonna get a job that I, you know, get paid for until I only have to pay for childcare for one kid. So I ended up interning at first, and like would bring my kids with me, which was great. And then after a while they're like, you're really good at this. We'd like to pay you. Is that cool? I'm like, yes, that would be lovely. I would like to get paid. Thank you. So I, you know, thought I would do that for, you know, the 2010 election cycle. And then they asked me if I could stay on until the end of February of 2011. And then I was going to like get prepared to go to law school. Mm-hmm. And then, as it happened, the world blew up in Wisconsin.
I was literally doing the math. I was like, oh man,
in,
so you,
you know, early,
right as the
early February
changed.
2011, the, you know, Act 10 happened. And as it's, you know, it's like nearing the end of the month and like my bosses were like, you know, you can't leave, right? Like, we need you to stay a little bit longer. And I was just like, yeah, sure, totally. I want to stay a little bit longer. And then, you know, kind of the more I thought about it, I knew I didn't want to, you know, like, be a practicing attorney. I wanted the legal education to be able to work in public policy, which is a great education to do that, but it's not like, you don't have to have a law degree to work in, you know, public policy and government. I had worked in local government when I lived in Florida. I worked for the city attorney's office where in the city I grew up in and really enjoyed that. So I knew I wanted to have some connection to government policy. I hadn't really thought about the politics side of it. And, you know, now I'm back on the politics side. I actually prefer the government side because I'm kind of a nerd like that.
Like working in an office, yeah, versus trying to get people elected.
Yes.
Because they're very different.
They are very different. You know, I like both, but I actually probably prefer being on the official side because it's just really wonderful seeing things like actually get done. Like you do all the work of an election and a campaign to get somebody off into office so they can like do things. And then when somebody's in office and they actually get things done, that's like amazing. And you just see, you know, how government has the power to help people, which is really incredible. I got to see that firsthand when I worked for Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley and working for Governor Evers. So that's been a really wonderful experience for me. So that's what brought me up here. A little change in career path. Like I studied math and criminal justice in college, and now I do communications. So it was a big shift for me, but one I enjoy, and I'm very, very grateful to have had the experiences I've had in Wisconsin, and definitely love it here. My original thought when I moved up here in 2010 was I'd, you know, stay here for school, finish up, and probably move back to Florida, and that's not what happened. We're here, and my family's here, and we love it. I miss my mom and my sister, and you know, aunts and uncles and friends, and everybody who's in Florida still. And I love when I get to go visit them. But we just love being in Wisconsin. Yeah. It's an amazing state. So many wonderful people, and my kids get to go to a great school that they're able to walk to. So we're really loving it.
Are there any? Because I often joke whenever there is a Wisconsin man, mm-hmm, headline, I always bring up the obvious one, which is the Florida man. And but beyond sometimes Wisconsin people also doing silly things that make headlines, it feels like a very different place. But like, are there cultural similarities between here and Florida that you find comforting or discomforting?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there are. But, you know, there's a lot of differences. The Florida man trope is, you know, it's a thing for a reason. And you see a lot of those wild stories. And I often see them, like, you know, from my hometown. And like,
because where are you from originally?
I'm from Port St. Lucie, Florida, which for people who are baseball fans, is where the Mets have spring training. So, you know, it is like a little bit north of West Palm Beach.
Okay.
So on the east coast of Florida. There's definitely the Florida man trope exists for a reason. Just things happen there, man. Like it is.
Is it something? Is it the heat? Is it?
You know, I think
decision
maybe
skill?
Part of it. Like, but I would say too, like Florida is very much a place of transplants, right? Like you get so many people who come to Florida from like all over the country. So I think in some ways too, like you're collecting a little bit of the, you know, the weirdos from other places, and they find their home there. When I was down there recently, is, you know, talking with my brother-in-law, and you know, there's like 900 people a day moving to Florida.
I saw that. I mean, I saw that like right now the scales as they are, at least for 2020, 2021, and I don't know if all the stats have come in for 2021 into 2022, but that like the most migration has been to Florida and, mm-hmm, Texas. Isn't that a lot to do with no income tax?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's a big part of the appeal, is that there's no income tax, and, you know, property taxes are relatively low compared to a number of other states. And then, you know, people, like, I think you grow up and you live your whole life somewhere where, you know, your face is frozen several months of the year and you're like, hey, maybe it would be nice for it to be warm. But for me, it was kind of the opposite of, I really dislike super hot weather. And, you know, you get in Florida, you get, you know, as long as we have winter here, there is triple digit heat, 80% humidity in Florida. And to me, that is miserable.
That,
and
is, that is like a trade off.
I cannot
take.
Handle that. I can deal. I would rather have winter. And I feel like, you know, our winters are decently mild.
Yeah. But you know, they're a little long.
The one thing I miss the most is public subs. So if you know, you know, public subs.
All right. Well, we'll take another break. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. This is Kristen Bry. I'm here with Melissa Baldoff. That's actually the other song. That was,
yes.
As we were talking about the Beyonce song, or the Beyonce, one of Beyonce's song on off her new album, that used a word, and then Lizzo had to use that same word. And actually, in that opener, and we had, it's now bleeped out. And so,
that's good. That's progress, right?
That's progress. All right. You probably know more about this than I do, because I feel like, we don't always talk a ton, and that's on purpose, about national politics on this show, because there's a lot of other shows that do that. And I feel like there is a lot of room to make this show fairly Wisconsin-centric. However, it feels like we should still talk about what happened in D.C. last week, because it feels like a big deal. And it feels like there was all of a sudden, a lot happened. And so it started really with the CHIPS bill passing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, and you can correct, I'm going to summarize what, like, in the, how I get my news in, like, tweets and podcasts, I'm going to try to piece it together. You tell me where I get it wrong.
Okay, I bet you're going to get it right.
So, shockingly, you know, every once in a while, Congress gets things done. So we passed the CHIPS bill, which was basically having semiconductors, passing legislation for it to be easier to make semiconductors in the United States, which has been a huge reason why there's been supply chain issues, especially when it comes to cars, right?
Yep.
So, like, but trying to buy a new car has been impossible because they're not making new cars, because most of cars now need these semiconductors because they're like the computer chip. And so now that we can make them here, that can potentially ease the car situation and computers and stuff. Right so far?
Yep.
Bipartisan bill. Great. Got it passed. So then all of a sudden, Joe Manchin, who's been kind of this, like, fence rider and, like, demon of the, like, Democratic Party because he can't get on board with the party politics, all of a sudden it's announced that him and Biden have come to a deal that is a budgetary deal that is a different version of kind of where we were trying to go with Build Back Better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and he's on all the shows now. Joe Manchin's doing like the rounds of all the Sunday shows.
Yeah, it's like that. Watch this. Like, oh, we're gonna get something done. Watch this.
And he's all on board. He's the face of this thing. It's called the Inflation Reduction Act, which is a good name.
Agree. It's,
you know, pulling that name. People are on board with that. And obviously now Republicans are like, there's too much winning happening on the Democratic side. And I've heard mixed things now on whether or not that, like, getting both of those bills done, especially in such quick succession, was the reason that they've now totally flipped, them being Republicans, on their vote for this PACT Act, which I knew about because I had watched Jon Stewart's new show, and his first episode back with the problem with Jon Stewart on Apple was about these burn pits in Afghanistan and Iraq and how it's giving veterans cancer.
It's just devastating effects.
Terrible.
Yes.
And the refusal so far for the veterans and for veterans to be able to get health care, despite the fact that they were exposed to these burn pits and the health conditions it provides them for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
So John Stewart's also been like involved heavily in all of this because he's an activist when it comes to these issues. So after it had 80 votes, this PAC Act, then all of a sudden it comes back because of a technicality to vote on again, and 30 Republicans had changed their mind and now voted against this PAC Act. Did I get it right?
I think he did. And but it's like it is one of those things that just like boggles the mind that you've got Republicans out there who, you know, they're like a big part of their brand is we love veterans so much and we love police officers so much. And I'm not saying like people don't love them, right? Like we should.
And that they
them.
Haven't served.
Right. And they've served.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
But it is so like so ingrained in who they are and like what they say their brand is, right? Like who they say they are. And like time and again, we see them take votes that harm those same people that they say are their heroes. And it's really, really frustrating and disappointing to see just as an observer what's happening, as just like an American who wants to see things get done and wants to see us care for the people who put their lives on the line and go serve our country. I can't imagine how people who have served and family members of people who have served are feeling about this, because it's just devastating to, you know, send people into these dangerous environments to protect our freedom, and then they come home and not give them what they need to be whole. So it's devastating to see that, you know, the gamesmanship here. And I think, though, it's really representative of how this iteration of the Republican Party, it operates. They are more focused on the other side getting a loss, or like the perception of a loss, than of like anyone getting a win, right? Like as long as their opponent is losing or looking bad, that is what they care about. And I don't think they care as much if they get in the mud too, as long as they can hopefully, you know, they want to just be a little less bad. They're not trying to deliver. They're not trying to get wins. They're not trying to get things done. They're trying to be just a little bit less worse than Joe Biden is what I see.
Well, and that's what, because there's two different things potentially going on with the PAC bill. As far as like I've heard analysis, whatever quote you want to put, quotes about around that you want to put, is that it's like petulance of just trying to slow down how much is getting done in Congress as going into the midterms,
right,
which is wildly frustrating. But then the other thing that is thrown out is that it's the difference between discretionary and mandatory budgeting. And I wanted to play, so like I'm not probably shocking to anyone, like my idol is Jon Stewart. If I could ever be as funny and as smart and as eloquent as that man, I will have succeeded. And as passionate. And so he has, like I said, he dedicated a whole episode of this and his actual time in activism. So he's been making the rounds as far as calling everyone out for their hypocrisy on this issue. And so there was two different clips. Jane picked the one with less cursing. So
I did see one of the clips. So I'll be curious to see which one this is.
And so she picked the one that there would be less bleeping out to do. And so I think this is the one when he's correcting Ted Cruz, right? And so, because Ted Cruz is trying to explain the difference between discretionary and mandatory funding, and John Stewart calls BS. So let's play that.
Yeah, look, I didn't see John Stewart. He's actually quite funny. Look, he's talking about the PACT Act, which is a bill I support. It's a bill most senators support.
Oh, hello. I'm John Stewart. Apparently, quite funny. And I'm awfully interested in what Theodore Cruz is about to say about the PACT Act. Go on.
But what the dispute is about is the Democrats played a budgetary trick, which is they took $400 billion in discretionary spending and they shifted it to mandatory.
One thing, what Ted Cruz is describing is inaccurate, not true. This is no trick. Everything in the government is either mandatory or discretionary spending, depending on which bucket they feel like putting it in. And he's pretending that this is some new thing that the Democrats pulled out, stuck into the bill, and snuck it past one Ted Cruz. Now, I'm not a big city, Harvard-educated lawyer, but I can read. It's always been mandatory spending so that the government can't just cut off their funding at any point. No trick, no gimmick.
And so it's just part of the out of control spending from the left.
They want to buy Hunter Biden cocaine, a crack cocaine. and they want to purchase all your pronouns. Be careful. They're coming for your pronouns.
Ah, he's so good. He's so good.
So this is that was not the one I saw.
So and which the one? Because the other one was when he was at the Capitol.
Yes. And he was like just direct to camera and just kind of like really broke it down.
And he called them that they're tortoises. They live to 200. They don't care about your health. So it's wildly frustrating. But the good news is because it's a budget, not the PACT Act, but the new IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, is a budget vote. So the whole reason why it's always come down to Manchin and there's no talk of the filibuster is because it's a budget thing. Mm-hmm. And so if we can get Sinema on board, there's likely this is going to pass. Correct?
I think so. I mean, and I think it's really important. You know, this would be, you know, a historic investment in climate action. It would be $369 billion in energy and climate investments and, you know, the single largest investment in U.S. history. So I think that's really another significant component of it, you know, which is it's not enough. We need to do a lot more. But to be able to strike a compromise of this scale of so much significance for the American people to address current and future issues, you know, I think is just you know, an example of the president's leadership and what he ran on, mm-hmm. of being the kind of leader who could get people to come together and get things done.
And that's what's interesting to me, because listen, I'll be the first one to admit that I think Biden's very old, and you know, and that it's you know, his every time he had every like the day he fell off the bike, I was like, damn it, because you know that people are going to run with
it. Hey, at least he can ride a bike,
at least
though.
He can, say, yes, as Pete Buttigieg said, right. But like, I obviously find myself also falling into the trap of how media presents him and what I think and stuff like that, because like when you actually put the numbers down, if this gets passed, the amount that they actually have gotten done in 2 years... it's actually astonishing.
It is.
And so the amount that people have been like, you have the House, you have the Senate, you have the presidency, do something. Granted, when it comes to abortion as healthcare, and there's a lot of different things that we probably will not get done. But if you think about at least in the first term of Trump's presidency, really all they did was to sign the tax cuts, right? Like they didn't, mm-hmm. I don't think they had passed any other major legislation.
Yeah, I mean, it's from what I've heard too, like 2 years into the Trump presidency, like half the people in the White House didn't even know where the light switches were, right? Like it seems like that was such like a bumbling operation, you know, top to bottom. I don't think they accomplished a whole heck of a lot.
But even like even though they also had Republicans had the House and the Senate,
right,
then too, like they didn't really get much passed either. Mm-hmm. And so what the count right now is the infrastructure bill,
mm-hmm.
Gun, like massive gun legislation, this semiconductor chips bill, what else, what am I missing, potentially this the Inflation Reduction Act,
right?
Is there any other major thing that they've actually...
So you said the infrastructure bill, but there is also... I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's...
Those are the, like, that's those the big, are big stuff. Ones, but that's a lot in 2 years. And so do you think, as a Democratic strategist, do you think that makes a difference going into November?
Yes and no. It's always good to have positive things to run on. It's, you know, I think some of it can be challenging, though, because not all of those things are like sound super sexy, right? Like the chips thing, that's not like sounding super sexy to most voters. They're like, well, what is that? Chips. All I know is my chips are more expensive at the grocery store now, right? So I think a lot of it will come down to voters' attitudes about the economy. And to the extent that Democrats are able to make the case that, you know, the decisions that Democrats have made are what is going to help you get through this, and we have a plan to get through this. You know, I think it's like what people need to hear. But yeah, I mean, having wins to run on is helpful, and it's also really helpful to draw a contrast with Republican opponents. You know, this is a person who voted against healthcare for veterans with cancer. You know, that is, it sounds fake. Like, it sounds like nobody would actually take that vote. And yet,
here we are. All right. Well, we're going to take one more break. We only have one segment left.
Oh my gosh. This did go by fast.
All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and my guest, Melissa Baldoff. We'll be back in a minute.
Again, bro. That's my girl, we codependent. If she with it, then I'm with it. Yeah, we tussle, mind your business. Slew. That's my girl, we CEOs and dancing like a CEO.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are in our last segment. Only got 10, not even 10 minutes left. Our guest today has been Melissa Baldoff, and so much fun.
Yes.
Goes by so quickly. I feel like we still have so much more to talk about.
I know.
Even after we turn it over to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian after this. But we were talking about, so we've talked about Beyonce earlier as a new album for the rest of the summer. Mm-hmm. What other good shows or movies have you and Joe been watching?
So we just finished watching The Bear.
Ooh.
Which was very good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Like, really clever writing and fun premise. So if you're not familiar with it.
I watched, so Mike started watching that. So let's just do this premise.
So
yeah, go ahead.
It is a show on FX. Available to stream on Hulu, I believe, is how we watched it. And it is a highlights a family restaurant in Chicago, and, you know, kind of how they are working there after the brother of the main character on the show had been running it and dies. And so now everybody else coming in to, you know, carry on with this, you know, the family's legacy of this restaurant.
I didn't watch the whole season. Mike was watching it, and then I think I got into it like the last three episodes. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know how it started, but I know how it ended. And it was very good. So the main character is the same guy who plays Lip on Shameless.
Yes.
And he's excellent.
Agree.
And it's also, I think, for anyone who's ever worked in a restaurant, it's part of the reason why it's been such a hit for this summer is because they like nail it. Whether it's, even though this is like an Italian sandwich shop, mm-hmm. the premise is that the main character was like a 5-star Michelin chef.
Yeah, like a fine dining chef, right.
And he comes home and he starts treating this kitchen like it's like a really nice restaurant.
Right.
But like the chaos of what it can be to work in a restaurant, because a lot of the shots are like a single shot, mm-hmm. which, having been an actor, those are really hard.
Right, I'm sure.
Like, because it's not even just, when you're doing a single shot, whether it's a TV show or a movie, it's not like, oh, we're doing a play and the camera's taping the play. Everything has to be choreographed mm-hmm. to a T, because you have to think the camera is maneuvering around the action of the film. And if one thing goes wrong, you start from
right.
one. And so there's one episode that the entire episode is shot in one shot, and it is hectic.
Yeah, it's very chaotic. Yeah.
And so that's,
but great.
Yes, but it's really good. So highly recommend that. Anything else on the
So my favorite show is I Really Love So You Think You Can Dance. Okay. I'm so happy.
What season is that in?
Oh my gosh. I want to say this is like maybe season 17. Like at first started when my daughter was a baby, and I remember like sitting on my couch like nursing and like watching the show, And now she's 17. So yeah, I guess it's probably like season 17. So I really love that show. It's so much fun for me to enjoy. And then the other thing that I've been really interested in, well, two other shows, Only Murders in the Building.
That's so Selena Gomez and
Selena Gomez,
Steve
Martin and Martin Short.
Perfect. Yeah.
It's just like really fun and clever. Really enjoy that. And then For All Mankind, which is on Apple TV. It's fascinating. It is, the premise of the show is it starts with like the space race, and it imagines like an alternate history where the Russians got to the moon before the Americans.
Okay. So it's like a Man on High Mountain where it's like, oh, if the Germans and Japanese had won.
Yeah.
World War II. Okay.
And it's just really interesting. The acting is great. It's a lot of fun.
All right. I'll have to add those. We just finished We Own This City. Not that fun.
Okay.
Not that fun. Very good. It's the same creators of The Wire.
Oh, okay. You
know, arguably mm-hmm. the best show to ever been created.
I agree.
But it's David Simon, and it's what's crazy is that it's a lot of the same actors. Like, if you liked The Wire and you wondered where a lot of the kids went, they show, okay. And not only just the kids, like a lot of the same actors that were in that show are in this series. But this series is less about, not even less, it is instead of fictional characters of Baltimore, the streets, the cops, the lawyers, everything, it is the true story of the Baltimore Police Division of the Gun Trace Task Force.
Oh, wow.
That went down as the most corrupt task force in history, in American history. And it breaks down the real people that were involved, and it's wildly well done. And it's similar to The Wire, where it makes you feel a little depressed about the entire system.
Yeah.
Jane, have you watched it?
I haven't, but speaking of The Wire, it reminded me of David Simon, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
I follow him on Twitter.
He's a good Twitter follow.
Oh, the man is brutal. Don't ever challenge him on Twitter. He will crush you.
Do you think he just sits there?
And waits. Bring it.
I always wonder for like big celebrities like that who are the creative directors of massive television series, but just make the time for the random person on Twitter. It's like, no, this is not the day, and I am not the one.
Right.
And I'm going to ruin your life today, sir.
Right.
Don't you have better things to do?
But you know what? I am somebody who is like, if these people are going to F around, like, they're sure going to find out. And I think I admire that energy in people.
Do you have a protocol for how you will engage with people on Twitter? Because I just largely just ignore people.
I usually do as well. So the reason I used to be more like I would engage on social media with things. And, you know, as you are aware, as a woman who is a public figure, that's not always great for you. Like when I worked for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and was the spokeswoman there, like, you know, we would get like death threats to the office sometimes, or like messages like calling you like all the worst words, and, you know, it's not always a great time to be a woman on the internet. So that limits my response sometimes.
Your combativeness.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, I'm also not afraid to smack somebody down if I need to.
Tussle.
That's right.
All right. Well, where can people find you on the Twitter if you want to be found?
They can find me on the Twitter at @mbaldoff.
Perfect. And then anything next that people should look out for, or just the next time you're on the show?
Yeah, next time I'm on the show, and we'll hopefully have some other fun stuff to talk about. And I would just use my last moments of time to remind everybody to make sure they get out and vote in the primary a week from today.
All right.
You can early vote in person still for the next couple of days, so make sure you make a plan to vote.
Go vote. And we'll see you back tomorrow, As Goes Wisconsin, with Kristen Fry.